Good morning, Tucson, and all of Southern Arizona. Welcome into the Common Workspace Studios for this morning's drive time hour of Tipping Point with Zach Yenser, daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. I am your host, Zach Yenser. Happy Friday to you. And boy, I know it's cliche to talk about the weather, but the kind of weather we're getting has been rare the last couple years. It's fun to talk about it. Crazy storms last night. Stay safe out there, Tucson. If you don't think you can drive through something, you probably can't. Don't do it. Let's stay safe. The next couple days are going to be a lot of rain. Let's just stay safe. That's going to be my final PSA on that. Rex Scott, supervisor for Pima County, Pima County Supervisor, District 1, a Democrat on that board, is with us for the first half of this hour. Lots of conversations. This is our third week in a row having a Pima County Supervisor on. I've got five questions to ask the supervisor. If we can get through it, lots to talk about. We'll also talk about side hustles, something that came out of COVID. We'll talk about it with our financial contributor, Jason Robinson of Mass Mutual. But let's get Supervisor Rex Scott on in here, our guest conversation today. Supervisor, thanks for being with us. I always appreciate it.
Zach, thanks for the invitation. It's always great to have time with you and your listeners.
Yes, and I was telling you, you are the, in no particular order, by the way, you are the third of three in a row conversations. We had Supervisor Hines on a couple weeks ago, Supervisor Christie, and I kind of think our conversation together will be a hybrid of those two. I want to jump right in and ask you about the plans for the Keno Sports Complex expansion. It was approved earlier in the month, a development agreement for new sports entertainment venues, ice sports complex, hotels, retail and dining space, outdoor plaza areas, and more. It's expected to take about 10 months, pre-development will at least, and then construction will come after that. You know, I wanted to ask you, Supervisor Scott, specifically because you have been a pretty vocal advocate, supporter of this. You are a fan of this idea. Detractors, Supervisor Scott, will point to, look, Keno 1, for lack of better terms, was kind of put in the middle of nowhere, and it has had a lot of fears. Why would we redo that again with this? And other detractors will say there doesn't seem to be a huge team behind this. Who's actually doing the pre-development? You're a fan. What excites you about this project?
Well, this is a public-private partnership. And so I know that some of the criticisms have been from people who have said, well, if this is so enticing and interesting to the private sector, why aren't they taking the lead on this? They are in partnership with the county because the county owns the land. And the three goals of this public-private partnership are to, one, generate revenue for the county, two, reduce the county's potential financial risks, and three, generate substantial regional economic development benefits. And to me, the way the business plan for this venture is structured, Zach, it is the very definition of low risk to the county and its taxpayers with potentially very high rewards. And what I would encourage anybody who's skeptical or just wants to learn more about the project would be to get on the county's website and look at the business plan that has been submitted by our private sector partner, Knott Development. What they have already done to assure a high level of daily local use of both the Iceplex and the Fieldhouse is going to assure the revenue that the facilities need to be viable. And what they have already done to assure a huge flow of tournaments, youth tournaments, adult tournaments, in both the Iceplex and the Fieldhouse will lead to the regional economic developments that are another one of these goals of the public-private partnership. So when I've heard some of the criticisms in the community of what's going to be happening at the Keno Sports and Entertainment Complex, it strikes me that some of those criticisms have come from people who really haven't gotten into the business plan and its particulars in the way that they should if they're going to be critical.
Fair enough, Supervisor Rex Scott. Lots to get to. I do want to do one follow-up. I kind of look at there was a time when lots of dollars were pumped into both Mesa and Tucson for similar kinds of sports complexes. I remember Mesa was very strategic about building it out in density and with a desire to create more density along with hotels, along with retail. It was something that, in my opinion, and I was at the Keno Sports Complex last week, it's beautiful stuff, didn't do from the beginning. Mesa has been more successful. Are you encouraged then by the retail, hotels, plaza areas? Is that going to finally create the walkability, the density, the proximity to more than just sports facilities that Keno as a whole, in my opinion at least, has always needed to be ultimately successful? Does that feed into some of your optimism for this?
My optimism comes from the plans for the four anchor elements for the complex: the Iceplex, the field house, the stadium, and the parking garage. And there's still work being done in terms of assuring the daily local use and the high tournament bookings for the stadium, because that's going to be built after the Iceplex and the Fieldhouse. The Iceplex and the Fieldhouse should be ready to go by 2023, and it's going to be the daily local use and the tournament bookings that are going to generate the interest in the retail and restaurants and hotel spaces, not just within the complex. The complex is only going to have 540 hotel rooms. When you are talking about some of the tournaments that are going to be booked at the Iceplex and the Fieldhouse, they're going to need a lot more than those rooms. That's where you're going to have benefits to the hotels and motels off-site. That's where you're going to see benefits to the restaurants and retail locations, not only on the site, but outside the site. And the vast majority of the economic developments that should come, economic development benefits that should come from this complex are outside the complex's boundaries. So that's why it is potentially game-changing for our region.
Gotcha. I want to ask on the other side of the break, I don't want to squeeze it in now, about water rates, another thing that you were a huge advocate against in terms of the city of Tucson raising those. Real quick question before our break, I do want to fit this in. Your fellow supervisor, Matt Hines, has said that if the city of Tucson were to pass the fight for $15 minimum wage, which we found out this week is going to go on the ballot, there were enough signatures that he would push for the county to match that there would be a regional $15 minimum wage. Would you join Supervisor Matt Hines in that push to align the county with the city should the voters vote for it in the fall?
The minimum wage is primarily a federal responsibility, and I think when states like Arizona, and we've had two minimum wage measures on our state ballot in the last few years, they passed because the people are irritated with the fact that the federal government has not acted to raise the minimum wage since, I think, 2009 or 2010. It's still at the absurd level of $7.25. I endorsed Fight for 15 because it was another opportunity for the public to weigh in on whether or not the minimum wage should be raised after a vigorous public debate. But it seems to me that if we are potentially going to be one of the 15 counties, the only one of the 15 counties that would be that would have a $15 minimum wage, that is something that should be decided by a vote of the people, not by a vote of three people on the Board of Supervisors. So no, I would not act as a supervisor to take that action. I don't think that is something that should be a vote of three of five people on the Board of Supervisors. It's much too significant a decision for it to be something that is determined by three people. I would support a public vote and have a robust public debate about whether we want to be the only one of 15 counties to do that. But I would not take that action as one supervisor.
Supervisor Rex Scott on the Pima County Board of Supervisors representing District 1 is with us here for the first half of our program here on this Friday edition of Tipping Point with Zach Genser. We're going to go to break. When we come back, Supervisor Scott was very vocal against the city of Tucson's raising water rates on unincorporated Pima County residents. That rate increase passed since we last had Supervisor Scott on, so we'll get his thoughts. Also want to talk jobs, economic recovery, and even affordable housing if we can get to it. Lots to go here on the program. We'll do as much as we can. We'll be back here on 1030 The Voice. Tipping Point continues.
Listen to the live stream and find podcasts of your favorite shows at kvoi.com.
The Men in Black are back. FC Tucson is our city's own professional soccer team, featuring talent from around the country and the world. They're ready to get back to business and a winning season for Tucson fans. Each one of the 14 home games this season will be uniquely curated and feature the sights, smells, and sounds of Tucson, but with the intensity of a playoff berth at Keno Stadium. Tickets now on sale. Head to fctucson.com to get yours for an exciting season of high-flying football. fctucson.com.
The economy is moving forward, and Arizona businesses are looking at new opportunities and challenges as we emerge from COVID-19. Leading companies are planning how to respond to new business and rebuild their teams and are looking for critical talent now. The right talent in key positions will make all the difference, and having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge. Devin and her team at Talent Store will connect you with top talent while positively impacting time to hire, retention, and your employer brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and scheduling time with Devin and her team.
In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's 40 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new Tech Park at the Bridges that just broke ground, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business. You love Decibel Coffee Works, the coffee of Tipping Point and the Genser household, for their quality roasted coffee and beans. Now they're giving you even more reasons. Open now, the Scratch Kitchen at the MSA Annex will provide quick and easy breakfast and lunch with vegetarian and vegan options available to enjoy with your drink. Visit the MSA Annex right off the I-10 and Cushing to be one of the first to try. 267 South Avenida del Convento. And we're back to Tucson and all of Southern Arizona here on 1030 The Voice in the Common Workspace Studios. Tipping Point with Zach Genser. Our guest here for this Friday edition is Supervisor Rex Scott, Pima County Board of Supervisors, representing District 1 on that body. Supervisor, I think since the last time you and I were on the air together, the city of Tucson did go ahead and authorize the process to lock in a water rate increase at differing levels on unincorporated Pima County residents. You were pretty vocal against that, and even some of your supervisors differed with you on that. But what do you think now on the other side of it passing? What's ahead for the county? Is there going to be any legal repercussions posed back to the city of Tucson for that decision?
Well, the main reason that I opposed this proposal from Tucson Water that was endorsed by every member of the Tucson City Council is because a significant number of my constituents would be affected by these higher rates. And many of these people have been Tucson Water customers for 30 or 40 years, and all of a sudden, with no cost of service rationale behind it, the city wants to charge them higher rates. It was unjust, it was inequitable, and yes, we are going to be considering all of our options to advocate not only for the county's interests, because the county is a Tucson Water user in the unincorporated areas of the county, but also to advocate on behalf of our constituents, many of whom live in my district, who are going to be affected by these higher rates. And you can expect us to be talking at both of our August meetings about the different options the county may pursue in fighting this measure.
Is there a sense from your perspective that we've heard certainly the line of there's a different approach to regionalism over the last couple of years, whether it is RTA, whether it is water? Do you sense that this is a one-off decision, or is this a part of a pattern? I believe you're also Pima County's representative to the RTA or to the Pima Association of Governments. Is this becoming a pattern that's of any concern to you, or is this a one-off situation?
Well, I've only been a supervisor for 6 months. So for me to be detecting any kind of pattern, I'd have to have been in the job longer to be doing that. And there are a lot of areas, Zach, where the county and the city work in partnership with each other. Certainly many more areas where we work harmoniously than areas where we have a disagreement. Obviously, this differential water rates issue is the biggest source of disagreement, but, you know, I'm confident that working not just with Mayor Romero, who is the city's representative to the Pima Association of Governments and Regional Transportation Authority, but with the representatives from all of the other jurisdictions that that make up those two bodies, that we're going to be able to come up with a way for the Citizens Advisory Committee to move forward and craft an RTA next plan that we can put towards put to the voters to replace the current plan, which expires in 2026. And it would be absolutely, and I don't think this is hyperbolic saying this, it would be absolutely catastrophic for this region if we do not have an RTA plan to replace the current one. The revenues that all of our jurisdictions, including the city, rely on from the RTA will go away in 2026 if we don't have a substitute plan, a replacement plan, I should say, approved by the voters. And let's remember that the legislature gave the RTA permission, because the RTA is a special taxing authority authorized by the legislature. The legislature gave the RTA permission to ask the voters to either renew the existing half cent or to ask for additional revenue up to a full penny. And there's no one of us, including the city, that can generate that kind of revenue and that kind of attention to our transportation needs acting alone. So again, it would be catastrophic for this region's future if we were to fail in our duty to come up with an RTA next plan that can be supported by all the voters, including the folks who live in the city of Tucson. I have a lot of regard and respect for my colleagues in city government, and I'm always going to look for ways to work in partnership with them.
We're with Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott, District 1, this morning. I want to try to fit in at least one, but maybe two topics that were a part of your platform as a candidate. I remember, Supervisor Scott, I was listening back to my conversation last week with U of A economist George Hammond, and he's quoted there saying, Tucson is lagging behind the state. We have a lot of ground to make up. I listened three times, Supervisor, to make sure I got this, what I'm about to say, correct, because I couldn't believe it when I heard it twice. He said that 90% of Arizona's job growth since June of last year has come from Phoenix, statewide, 90%. Tucson, Flagstaff, and Yuma, he mentioned, are lagging incredibly behind. The state cannot fully recover from COVID if our Tucson metropolitan area doesn't start pushing the gas pedal of economic recovery. What do we got to do to speed this thing up, Supervisor Scott? Why are we only a percentage of 10% of job growth in the entire state here in the second largest community in Arizona?
I think it's too early to make judgments because we're in the very early stages of the pandemic and there's still some uncertainty in both the populace overall and certainly the economy because of the strength of the Delta variant, especially its effect on people who are unvaccinated. But what I think we need to continue to do is where there is the ability of government to share with our private sector partners some of the relief funds that we have gotten through the three federal relief bills. We need to look for the opportunity to do that, and certainly the county and the city are both doing that. But I also think that we need to be reaching out to our partners in the private sector and asking them, what do they need more of or less of from county government in terms of charting their own path to recovery? I don't think that governments certainly can hinder their creation by getting in the way of what our private sector partners need to do to recover their businesses and start getting their workforces back to pre-pandemic levels. So I think we need to always be engaging in dialogue with the folks who come to the county for different different regulatory actions and ask them what they need more of, what they need less of. But I think it's really, to finish where I started, it's really too early to say exactly where we stand as a region with regard to the post-pandemic recovery.
Supervisor Scott, I want to squeeze this in. Let's do a minute and a half if you can. Affordable housing, sure. Potentially tens of thousands of Pima County residents will be impacted by the end of the eviction moratorium in just a matter of days. In a minute and change, anything Pima County can do to mitigate?
This is another area where the city and county are working in partnership because we didn't like the mechanisms that the state set up to get rental relief funds out to landlords and tenants. So we are working together along with the Community Investment Corporation to get those funds out to tenants and landlords. And we have already been cited by the Arizona Multi-Housing Association, one of our private sector partners, as a model for getting those funds out. But we are also working in partnership, the city and the county, to revitalize our two housing commissions and to come up with an overall affordable housing strategy. We had people who were challenged by housing costs well before the pandemic in both the city and the county, and you're going to be seeing in the next months us rolling out a joint effort to develop an overall affordable housing strategy that takes into account not just any new developments of affordable housing, but also how to make use of existing housing stock.
Very cool. Supervisor Scott, I sent over five topics that I hoped we would get through. We did it, which I wasn't sure if we would. But we did it. And Supervisor Scott, I appreciate not one but two segments with you, the ground that we covered. Always a pleasure to have you on. Thanks for your service, and we'll do this again soon. Stay safe and cool out there this weekend.
Same to you and your family, Zach. And again, I always appreciate the opportunity to spend time with you and your listeners. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Supervisor. And that wraps up our guest conversation of this Friday edition of Tipping Point. We'll be back here on 1030 The Voice in the Common Workspace Studios right after a short break with our sponsors and some news. Jason Robinson ahead. Get your finances right here on Tipping Point. 1030 The Voice. We'll be back in a minute.
Money Minute and CBS News at the bottom of every hour. 1030, The Voice. Trusted local news and talk.
The Men in Black are back. FC Tucson is our city's own professional soccer team, featuring talent from around the country and the world. They're ready to get back to business and a winning season for Tucson fans. Each one of the 14 home games this season will be uniquely curated and feature the sights, smells, and sounds of Tucson, but with the intensity of a playoff berth at Keno Stadium. Tickets now on sale. Head to fctucson.com to get yours for an exciting season of high-flying football. fctucson.com.
In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's 40 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new Tech Park at the Bridges that just broke ground, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business. You love Decibel Coffee Works, the coffee of Tipping Point and the Yenser household, for their quality roasted coffee and beans. Now they're giving you even more reasons. Open now, the Scratch Kitchen at the MSA Annex will provide quick and easy breakfast and lunch with vegetarian and vegan options available to enjoy with your drink. Visit the MSA Annex right off the I-10 and Cushing to be one of the first to try. 267 South Avenida del Convento.
When you manage your money with a credit union, you're taking true ownership of your finances and how your money impacts the community. Stop letting banking just happen to you. Bring your money home to Vantage West, federally insured by NCUA.
Trusted local news and talk. 1030, The Voice.
And we're back, Tucson and all of Southern Arizona, here in the Common Workspace Studios, Tipping Point, with Zach Yenser, part two, the second half of our Friday edition here. We just wrapped up our conversation with Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott, representing District 1 on that body. Here's a little secret. I don't give out questions. Right. Certainly to folks who are in seats like Supervisor Scott, because I think, you know, their job is to know the answers, not because they've seen the questions. But I will send out topics, and I sent Supervisor Scott five topics. Did not know if we were going to be able to get through it all, but lots to talk about, lots to chat about. And we covered all of that ground. And Ray, I was just thinking, this week has been, I think, a fantastic lineup of some of our special guests. Of course, our great regular contributors, but in terms of either new or special guests, Ruben Navarrete, Washington Post contributor, ASU President Michael Crow. We had iconic Tucson muralist Joe Padgett, gubernatorial candidate on the Republican side, Matt Salmon, Supervisor Rex Scott. I mean, every day this week has been, I think, an incredible guest voice to speak to issues that are really important. You can check it all out. iTunes, Spotify, kvy.com/podcasts. We take care of you right here on the program, making sure you're hearing from the people you want to hear about the issues that you care about. So you are invited to binge listen to Tipping Point with Zach Yenser this weekend when we're off the air, but on podcasts in living rooms everywhere. So thank you for listening. Thanks for engaging. And thank you to Supervisor Scott, as always, for his time. Short segment here. Looking forward to my conversation next with Jason Robinson, Mass Mutual. We're going to talk about a topic that is very COVID new. We talk about the new normal. I hate the phrase. I want that on record. But in terms of what is new after COVID, he and I are going to talk about something that is new. But I mentioned this to Supervisor Scott. It's been on my mind. I just wanted to kind of put it out there here before the week closes. I listened back to my Friday interview last week with U of A economist George Hammond. And I told Supervisor Scott, I'll tell you again, I listened to it three times, live with George, and then twice yesterday to make sure that I wasn't screwing it up, wasn't translating it right. I put this on my social media. Tucson is lagging behind the state. We have a lot of ground to make up. 90% of Arizona's job growth since June of last year has come from Phoenix. And George Hammond made this interesting comment that we are, as a state, going to be slowed from a full COVID, full pandemic recovery, a full recovery of the jobs that were lost, a February 2019 economic outlook. We will not get there if key parts of the state are not back to a rapid state of growth. And it was interesting because I listened back to the podcast again a couple times because I wanted to get it right. He mentioned Flagstaff, Yuma, Tucson. Those are the major metropolitan areas that are just, let's be frank, not pulling the weight. He mentioned some smaller cities and towns that are basically either back to or exceeding pre-pandemic levels. But in terms of major metros that drive Arizona growth, 90% of it is coming from Phoenix. And And I've been asking this question out in the community. I've been asking this question out in the community, naming the economic growth that has come into this state, whether it is Intel, whether it is Lucid, whether it is the semiconductor manufacturing company, whether it is Zoom. When does that start to happen in other parts of the state? And I got to tell you, and I say this out of an optimistic frustration. I'm going to start using that phrase because I'm not angsty because it's fun. I'm not angsty because I dislike where I live. I'm optimistically frustrated. I'm passionately frustrated because I actually think Tucson and Southern Arizona is a fantastic place to live, and it could be so much better. So I'm a frustrated optimist, but I've said, why isn't it happening here? And the response often is it's always somebody else's fault. I can't tell you how many rooms I will be in where it is somebody else's fault. There's somebody in some organization somewhere who isn't sending enough business down to Tucson, right? I heard this yesterday. It's political. You know, it's somebody else's fault. For a year now, I have heard it is somebody else's fault. It is somebody else's fault. There's somebody else in the game that is the reason why Tucson is only a slice of the 10% of economic recovery that is happening across the state. A slice of the 10%. We're not even 10%. We're a slice of that 10%. It is always somebody else's fault. Always somebody else's fault. And look, other people may be at fault, right? I mean, we don't get to control 100% of our own destiny here. We're a part of a state. We're a part of a nation. There's been a global pandemic. But there is never any personal responsibility at a municipal or an individual level to say, look, we need to shift this, this, and this. We got to turn the levers up. We got to switch what we're doing in this area. And I continue to look across the country where metros, where communities, where states are starting to become crystal clear in their messaging of what are their economic strengths. Here's why you should come here. Here's why you should move here. Here's how we reset. Here's how we restart. Some of those places have been doing this since June of last year, by the way. And I love you, Tucson, but I see only little shades of that, not complete strategy, just shades of that starting to happen, of that clarity of what we have to be doing and what our industries are, what we're good at, a reshaping of our narrative for the future. It's got to start happening quicker. It's got to start happening more clearly. And there are things that we can be doing locally that we aren't. We can continue to call out other factors that are outside of our control, but we have to at least say, what are we not doing right? Look, I'm a data guy, you know, and a lot of people say they are too. We look at the data. I'm looking at the data. 90% of Arizona's job growth since June of last year has come from Phoenix. At some level, you have to at least have the conversation, what more could we be doing here, right? Even if it's partially somebody else's fault, what aren't we doing here? And we've got to keep pace, not just for our benefit, but our state will be slowed until the entire state starts carrying its own weight. And this has just been on my mind lately. I thought I would. I had a moment to monologue. There's my monologue. I always look forward to closing out Friday with Jason Robinson, Mass Mutual, a couple times a month. We're going to talk about a new thing that happened out of COVID and what it might mean for your finances and your financial planning. That on the other side of our final break of this Friday morning hour of Tipping Point with Zach Yenser. We'll be right back.
The next generation of talk, Tipping Point with Zach Yenser, 1030, The Voice.
When looking at retirement planning, conventional thinking asks, how do I get a higher return? Should I take on more risk or is there a better product? Jason Robinson and his team at Mass Mutual focuses on the overall strategy first. He and his team of advisors have the tools necessary to measure the proper balance of investments and actuarial science for the best path possible for the highest retirement income. Call Jason and his team at 520-274-3749 to have them run through an analysis at no cost to see how much more efficient you can be, and tell them Zach sent you over.
The economy is moving forward, and Arizona businesses are looking at new opportunities and challenges as we emerge from COVID-19. Leading companies are planning how to respond to new business and rebuild their teams and are looking for critical talent now. The right talent in key positions will make all the difference, and having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge. Devin and her team at Talent Store will connect you with top talent while positively impacting time to hire, retention, and your employer brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and schedule time with Devin and her team.
Why I love where I live. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Like so many businesses, they had to make changes to their hours and operations during COVID-19. But I'm so excited to announce that they are now reopened for regular hours. Go to whyiloveWhereILive.com right now to see all the new products and offerings and plan a visit to their location at the MSA Annex on Cushing off the I-10 and Avenida del Convento. Why do you love where you live?
Hey there, Ari here with the Marinas team at Nova Home Loans. We share Zach's passion on Tipping Point of shaping yours and our community's best possible future. If that looks like purchasing a home in 2021, we want to be your partner in choosing the program that is the best possible decision for your financial and family goals. Call me at 878-7518 and let me know you heard us on Tipping Point to get started.
Ariel Ari Barrera, NMLS ID 1982127. Nova Home Loans, NMLS number 3087, BK0902429. Equal housing opportunity.
When you manage your money with a credit union, you're taking true ownership of your finances and how your money impacts the community. Stop letting banking just happen to you. Bring your money home to Vantage West, federally insured by NCUA.
This is The Voice, 1030, Tucson's trusted news and talk.
And we're back here, Tucson and all of Southern Arizona, here in the Common Workspace Studios on 1030 The Voice, Tipping Point with Zach Yenser, now in studio to close out our week. And I was telling our listeners, Jason, before the break, I always look forward to closing out Fridays this way with you. It's always a nice way to cap it off.
Good.
You know, because our Friday conversations, as it has been today, we had Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott on.
Yep.
Then I get on my soapbox for, thankfully, just a few short minutes. So I come out of that, and I'm usually excited about something. I go, oh, you know what? The soothing financial planning voice of Jason Robinson is going to close us out.
Yeah.
So here we go.
Well, good. Well, I'm glad I make this subject exciting for people to walk in. Some people could say I'm between them and happy hour too. So,
well, it's only 9:45. So
right.
Well, I will say this: if you and I are between someone and the weekend, good on you.
That's
good.
True.
If you're listening, that's you. Good on you. We'll get you to your weekend in about 15 minutes. The topic we're going to talk about today, Jason, I'm really excited about.
Yeah.
It's a real life topic. I said it in the last segment. I hate this term, the new normal. But
sure.
This is something new
That
has come about in the normal that is after COVID.
Sure.
Can't deny it. What are we talking about today?
Yeah. So when we've been chatting about this idea as a topic for a little while, but I'm calling it more of like the untraditional conversations about financial planning. And so really what we've seen is an uptick in something that coming out of COVID, you know, and the so what we'll call it is the side hustle is kind of a non-technical term. But really what I've really been seeing lately when talking with people is, you know, if we look back at where we were last year, and there was a lot of people that obviously were stuck in their home. And so what, you know, unfortunately, some people lost their jobs and they had no income coming in. Some people were fortunate to be able to maintain employment, but they had all this free time so that they couldn't go out. So now, I'm also really kind of passionate because I was on the latter one, fortunately.
Mm.
But what ended up happening was we're seeing a lot of people now start to create these side hustles. And so it's one of these things where, I'll share a little bit of my story here in a second, but it's really kind of an interesting story that's talked about how people are coming out of COVID and they're really kind of holding on to these side hustles.
Right. Yeah, this is an interesting twist on this a little bit, right? Jason is Jason Robinson, MassMutual. Listeners know you by now, financial planning. So you can speak to it from that hat.
Sure.
But you can also speak to it from a, you're in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. So, you know, the quick story is, you know, growing up, I've always just had this like little hobby of woodworking.
Yeah.
And so through COVID, there's this online community through Instagram, really, that has like this big woodworking community. And so I went on there and I was hanging out with some friends and we were having a cigar and a drink, and we hardly ever have them, and we had no idea where to put the ash, you know? So through those thoughts, I created this, what I'm calling now a pairing tray. So it has like a spot for a little cigar ashtray and a drink, and it holds them all in together.
Yep.
So I started doing this. A lot of people, I threw it up on the social media, and a lot of people enjoyed it. And so I thought to myself, well, I got to keep track of this stuff. So I put them up on Etsy, and it has been entirely fascinating. So November 5th or 6th, I think, was the first day that I had up on Etsy. And to this point, we've sold actually over 1,000 of these pairing trays. So it's really been kind of fascinating watching this thing grow and getting into it. So personally, I've seen it, what it looks like to have this like side hustle kind of turn into something where there's some revenue. And so from a personal standpoint, I've seen it. But then on the financial planning side that you're talking about, there are some things to be thinking about as it starts to drive some revenue.
Right. It's so funny because my brother, for about a year or so, this was a couple of years ago, was doing woodworking. It was Instagram driven. I think he had an Etsy, and he had to pause it after a while, but it was a booming side business for a while. I mean, there is a definite community.
Sure.
Online. And so we're talking financial planning, we're talking side hustles, but I'll just put a pin in this one real quick. But small scale manufacturing.
Sure.
In Tucson. I've had friends tell me for years, pre-COVID, but certainly after COVID, that's a thing in Tucson. I just want to put a pin in that because we're talking some econ dev. We're talking everything this morning with Jason Robinson. Small-scale manufacturing, right? Maybe just a little bit bigger than where you're at, but you're doing it. Your small-scale manufacturing is a thing in Tucson.
So yep.
Lots of angles on this.
So one of the interesting things, too, you know, so we're talking about this side hustle. There's this community. But I did a little research, too, just thinking about from the financial planning side. And it's interesting because if you look at Etsy, the company, the stock, it's up over 100% from this point last year.
So you're saying I should invest in Etsy?
No.
Okay.
I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying this is a trend, right? So, but maybe. It depends. Everyone's got their individual situation.
Right. We'll have that conversation off air.
Off air.
Jason
Square is one that I got involved with Square, too, to be able to run processing of payments. Square's up 116% last year. So, you know, there's so many other caveats to this. I ordered a CNC machine, kind of talking about that micro manufacturing to help produce these things at a higher level. I ordered it 3 months ago, and it still hasn't arrived. So I've got 3 more months, like 3 weeks or so is what they're saying before it arrives. So I'm looking, and there's all of these things that help, at least in my situation, these side hustles. And so, and a lot of the people that I'm talking with are, these side hustles could be all sorts of different things, but it really is, after we're coming out of COVID, I think people are asking me some questions, you know, and I'll tease this because I think we want to get into the weeds here in a couple weeks, but not necessarily today. We're just really talking about the higher level of what's going on. But people are saying, you know, do I need to pay taxes on this? Do I need to register this company? Do I need to open up a different checking account? You know, and ultimately, what should I do with some of this side hustle money? You know, so I think these are some of the things we'll talk about in the next couple of weeks. But if we get back into kind of this overall arching thing, I think it's been really interesting watching people's creativity really come out and really start to say, can we bring this to market as something that's valuable and sell it?
Right. You know, and I wonder too with your, you know, with your financial planning that you do. I mean, your sense has to be, and you might have hinted at it earlier, that this is not going away. That this is really here to stay. This even personal, small scale, you know, Instagram driven, Etsy's your platform, side business. You're having a cigar with a few friends and go, wait a second, I don't know where to go with this, and now you have a business.
Right.
That's here to stay, and it's been around pre-COVID for sure. But I think people's tendency to figure out, okay, what are the other streams of income can I develop? That's here to stay.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm in the woodworking world, but real estate agents have been on fire. The real estate market's white hot, right? I actually had a real estate team come to me, and they bought 20 cutting boards as closing gifts. You know, so there's all of these things that are getting created out of this that I think is just super fascinating. And the side hustle really is an opportunity for people to almost test drive whether or not, hey, it's cool to have just, you know, a few dollars coming in, or could this thing really manifest into their career? And so that's a lot of where I think we'll talk about next week, where how do we manage that conversation from a financial planning standpoint with, you know, hey, I had a lot of fun with it, made some dollars, but is this actually a long-term possibility or not? But some people are starting to actually say, man, do I have the entrepreneur spirit in me or not? And there's a lot of those questions, I think, that help play in that conversation.
Right. Yeah, and I'm audibling a little bit here because we've got plenty of time.
Yeah.
Let's definitely, you asked three or four really good questions there. Let's definitely get into the weeds on those.
Sure.
But you mentioned, do I need to pay taxes? Do I need to register the company? Do I need a different checking account? What do I do with the money? Any one of those, do you want to get into it a little bit more?
Yeah,
just to tease it next time?
I think the first one mainly is, do I need to register my company? I think that's one of the first questions people say, because they're like, oh, geez, do I have to like become an LLC, or do I need to trademark my name? There's all these different thoughts. And the simple question is, you don't have to.
Right.
So you could run it as basically a solopreneur. You know, and so you don't actually have to go to the state and register the company's name as an LLC. Now, I will say this way, you don't have to. Now, there's an entirely whole different legal standpoint of liability that, you know, you'd have to talk to your attorney about.
Right.
But for the most part, I would say you don't have to. And from a tax standpoint, you don't have to create an employer identification number. You can use your own social security number, essentially, when doing this kind of side hustle.
Right. No, I've seen that. I've seen that in the past where you kind of have an idea and then you get it going. You can do that as a sole proprietorship. You can do a DBA. Like you said, you can do your social security. We advise you at this point to go talk to all the professionals in these spaces.
Yeah.
We are not those people today, Jason. But then as the business has grown, you go, wait a second, you know, a sole proprietorship, if something goes wrong and somebody wants to sue you, that's you and your house. If you're an LLC, it's the business, right?
Sure.
And so you start to get into, hey, there's now scale and it's now a thing and you got to start thinking more seriously about it. You can always see it in that phased way. The beauty of the Etsy's and the Instagrams and the Squares of the world is you can kind of get started, start to see if there's some success, and then you can build it out. Then you can go to Jason Robinson and go, okay, I'm actually making real money off of this. What do I do with it?
Yeah. I mean, I work with an attorney here, and one of the questions I had was, can I patent this design that I've come up with for these little pairing trays? And the question or the answer was, no, you can't patent it, but you could trademark it. So then it's just a question of, do I want to go that route? But, you know, this is just in the woodworking world that I'm at. But it could be jewelry I've seen. Handcrafted stuff has really been kind of that side hustle thing that people have been able to do at home. 3D printing stuff. A lot of the automated manufacturing creation stuff, 3D printers, CNC machines, laser engravers. These are all the things that we've got at my house. And I'm just like an average person. Where a decade ago, these things were almost like, unless you were all in, you know, business, big scale manufacturing, the types of accuracy that was expected and being able to reproduce it was really outside of the scale. And now it's really being able to become at home.
Right. Yeah, I want to put this out here too. And we got plenty of time, but we're kind of rounding the third or fourth turn on this conversation.
Yeah.
But if you mentioned those four questions, we really want to get into this topic because I think, again, this is how we started the show. If there's anything that has really shifted as we've come out of COVID, I think people realized one stream of income may not be enough. That may be a rabbit hole to get into Jason Robinson too later is, you know, there's this, you know, golden handcuff idea. There's this, you know, you got a great job, good benefits. It's supposed to be a safety net. COVID showed you, man, nothing is certain.
Yeah.
And nothing was certain before COVID, but I think COVID for a lot of people was nothing is certain. And so having one or two streams of income can be a great safety net in case one goes up or down, the other one can go up or down. But if anybody wants to add to that list of questions, Do I need to pay taxes? Do I need to register the company? Blah, 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 blah. They can, can they reach out to you this week, shoot you an email?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can obviously call us here at the office. You can ask for me directly. Yeah. It's 520-274-3749. I'd actually be interested to see if you know, people have other questions. They can
That's
hit you
I'm
up
saying.
On your on your page and say, "Hey, Zach, you know, be sure to ask Jason this question." Or, I'm curious about what he would say about this. So
that was exactly where I was going with it. In 2 weeks from today, you will be back with us. We'll have a long conversation like we've had today, answering some of these questions, even just from what's worked for you.
Yeah.
So I would love to come back in 2 weeks and hear from our listeners. I've gotten texts from listeners as we've been talking.
Oh, wow.
So I know people are listening. Would love to know, you know, hey, you know, I would like to start a side hustle. I've been doing this thing on the side. I want to get more serious about it. What do I need to be thinking about in terms of finances and financial planning? Get a hold of either Jason or I in the next couple of weeks. We'd love to answer those questions in a couple of weeks.
I do need to give a shout out to my father. He turned 70 this week and retired this week. So I want to give him a huge, you know, shout out. Congratulations for him. Blue collar guy, worked his whole life.
I love it.
But also what's interesting is people that are retiring as well.
Yeah.
The traditional way of just, are my investments going to be able to produce that income? This side hustle theme also moves into retirement where they're kind of doing this thing as an alternative income.
Big deal. You're pairing trades, you're woodworking. I'm good shouting that out. People want to go get one.
Oh, yeah.
Where they go find you.
So the Etsy page, the company is Sport Class Customs.
Cool.
So they can find me on the Instagram, Etsy page.
Love it.
Check it out. It's really cool, I think.
I've even seen you with a shirt with that brand. So you're legit.
We got
You've got a shirt.
We're giving out some trophies at the Angels Charities, too.
It.
So a lot of stuff. You'll see them around.
I love it. Your number one more time, Jason Robinson, Mass Mutual. Where can people give you a call about this, but also anything financial planning?
Sure. Get in the office, 520-274-3749.
I love it. Jason Robinson, as always, thank you. We actually had, it felt like we could breathe through this episode and just have a conversation. It was fun. I'm really passionate about this coming out of COVID. I think it's important. Glad you're here to talk with us about it. Stay safe out there. Jason, don't go running through puddles.
No.
If you can't think you can go through it, don't go through it.
Right.
We want to see you in 2 weeks.
Yeah. No, the Pantano wash was flowing like crazy on my way here. People were like stopping, looking at it.
You hear that,
pictures.
Tucson? That advice is for you too.
It's crazy.
Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll be back. Hugh Hewitt coming up next. Bill Buckmaster at noon, as always. We'll return at 9 a.m. on Monday with a special new guest. I'm just going to leave it there and tease it. Stay safe. We'll see you on Monday. Take care, Tucson.